Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Murray Barlow from Rustenburg Wines in South Africa.
Great to be here.
Yes. Rustenburg is, well, they're one, you guys are fairly big. You know, I see your wines around supermarkets. Well, not supermarkets, Majestic. I've seen your wines in Majestic and a few other places.
You'll see them in Waitrose. Booths up in the north. So we do have some retail presence and then a lot of independent wine merchants as well.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the year before last, I got my team together and we every year we get together and we taste some wines that are fairly interesting, and about 2 years ago I did sweet wines, and we had a bottle of Rustenburg straw wine, I think it's called, isn't it?
Right, yes,
and we'll touch on that later on, but that was the first time I'd ever actually had one of your wines.
Oh, great.
It was quite interesting because we were tasting against all sorts of different things. You know, we had everything from Chateau Yquem to your wine to quite cheap sweet wines, everything. And so it was quite nice, interesting wine.
Great. No, it's a fun wine to make. So we'll definitely touch on that later on.
But you're based in Stellenbosch. Stellenbosch is sort of, you'd probably have to say that's the main wine producing region in South Africa, wouldn't you?
Well, if you go as far south and as far west as you can on the African continent, you get the city of Cape Town. And the oldest wine region is Constantia, which is right outside Cape Town, really sort of southeast of Cape Town.
Yep.
And the second oldest region is Stellenbosch. And we tend to have a reputation for being sort of go-to quality region. But that said, we've seen over the past a few years, a number of regions that maybe weren't necessarily associated with quality production coming to the fore.
Yep.
More cool climate wines, more coastal wines, people embracing the warmer areas as well. So I think there's a real coming of age throughout. But Stellenbosch is still, it's sort of, if you have to name one wine region in South Africa, it's probably going to be Stellenbosch that's going to pop in your head first.
That's the one. If anybody can name a wine region, it's probably Stellenbosch.
Hopefully. That's what we like to think. But everyone's the center of their own universe. So
let's talk about where Stellenbosch is, because it's near Cape Town, isn't it? In fact, Cape Town is such a large spreading city. On Google Maps, if you look at it, Cape Town almost goes to Stellenbosch now in terms of suburbs, and or at least maybe not be called Cape Town, but the buildings, houses and things seem to encroaching further and further towards Stellenbosch.
Sure. The greater Cape metropolitan area is growing very quickly, and it's a matter of time before we're really just a suburb of Cape Town. And that's one of the greatest threats to the region, actually, and the wine growing is housing development.
Yep.
The price of property is very high. And a lot of farmers are making more money selling their land as for housing development than they are out of making, selling grapes, which is a tragedy. But it's the reality of a lot of wine regions.
That's what's happened to Constantia, isn't it? Because it's, as a wine region, it's almost getting smaller and smaller, isn't it? Instead of expanding, because
it is
of property.
It is. It's probably the most some of the highest priced property in the whole country is around those winelands. And it was never a huge region. Constantia was never massive. But, it is putting pressure on them. So it's unfortunately the reality of the world today. People want to live in, a beautiful city like Cape Town, and that people can work anywhere they like now with the internet and sort of new wave of how people do business. So you can be wherever you want. And
yep.
Cape Town's probably one of the most beautiful cities in the country. And so we're seeing a huge amount of people moving, both foreigners and people from other parts of the country. And it's putting pressure on land as a result.
How far from Cape Town are you in Stellenbosch?
We're about a half an hour to 45-minute drive east.
Oh, so it's an easy commute as well.
It's very close. It's not too far.
Is it an easy commute? Like, the roads allow easy commute?
There are two major highways that can take you in, and then sort of two regional roads that can take you in. So if you're savvy enough, it's not too painful. But we're sorely lacking in terms of public transport. So that will help greatly if we ever sort that out.
Is there no train lines or anything?
There are trains. They're not great.
Yeah, okay.
So generally, I recommend people, if they are visiting and they are wine lovers and they do want to visit Stellenbosch, you can, for not a whole lot of money, hire a driver and a good car for a day, taste at four or five wineries, have a great lunch, and get dropped off back at your hotel in Cape Town. And it'll probably cost you sort of £100-£150 for the day, which is a great pleasure, not having to drive or drink and drive at least, or worry about anything like that.
So we've
seen a huge amount of tourism focused on wine. People come in, they want to go up Table Mountain, they want to go to the waterfront, they want to go to Robben Island, and people definitely want to go to the wineland. So we're seeing a massive upswing in tourism. Rustenburg has a tasting room which is open 7 days a week, and we see between sort of 16 and 18,000 tourists a year through there. It's a big draw for us. It's a big draw for the whole region.
I haven't been to South Africa before, but I've been to Australia and New Zealand a lot, and I know, and I've been to France a lot as well, and I know, and New Zealand and Australia, for me, were sort of the gold standard, because I haven't spent a lot of time in the US wine regions. How does Stellenbosch compare? Are you guys, you know, you've got a tasting room, are you well get up? Is a lot of wineries get up for wine tourism?
So there's a huge amount of focus on wine tourism. We're probably the least commercial. So a number of wineries have hotels, restaurants attached to them. Everything from day spas, coffee roasteries, craft breweries, craft distilleries. The range of different types of tourism that they accept is quite large. So, for example, we don't take tour buses, but other wineries specialize in tour buses. So there's a huge huge array. You can go to everything from a small mom and pop sort of winery that produces a few thousand bottles a year right up to some of the biggest wineries in the region. Yep. Everyone has a good tasting room. The staff are always well trained. There's a lot of great restaurants. I think we've got, of the top 20 restaurants in the country, I think 5 or 6 of them are in the winelands. So if you really want to push the boat out and go 5 stars, it's there for you.
Yeah.
But if you also want to be a little more budget conscious, that's an option too. So it's a big driver for all of our wine regions, is to grow the tourist numbers.
So you said you keep referring to the winelands rather than Stellenbosch. Are you talking about Stellenbosch and Paarl as the winelands, or what do you refer to?
If you draw sort of concentric circles or circles from Cape Town outwards, the further away from Cape Town, the less visitors people get.
Yep.
So Constantia gets by far and away the most, and then Stellenbosch. Then to the south of us, you've got the beautiful seaside town of Hermanus with the Hemel and Arda Valley around it, and a lot of really great Pinot Noir and Chardonnay being produced, which is a great draw card for people visiting there, maybe going to look at whales, a lot of whale watching in that part of the world.
What's the name of the valley?
Hemel and Arda. It means heaven on earth.
Say it again?
Hemel and Arda.
Himmel and Arda.
Yeah.
I've seen it written down lots of times, and I've always just been a little bit scared about pronouncing it.
Right, yeah. So basically heaven on earth, and it's a beautiful, you wind your way up this lovely pass and visit some of the, you know, icons of Pinot Noir production. People like Camelton Russell are there, Ataraxia, Creation Wines. Not huge wineries, but it's all producing quality wines. So, you know, you've got such a diversity. Then you can go up the north coast. You can visit areas like the Swartland and Darling, which are quite rustic and rugged, but still fun places to visit. If you go further east, you get into Paarl, which is a warmer, much warmer climate, more Rhone varietals. You can then go even further, almost to the semi-desert areas of Robertson, and then into the areas Worcester.
Yeah.
And then you get to the Clan Karoo, which is almost desert.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Clan Karoo is a region, and it's inland. Never seen any wines from there.
There's some amazing fortified wines coming out of that part of the world.
Okay.
So the greatest port style wines, we can't say port anymore, fortified dessert wines are coming out of there. And then a lot of port varietal red wines are coming out of that part of the world. There are probably only about 5 or 6 producers to write home about, a couple of big sort of cooperative producers, quite a lot of brandy being made out that part of the world. But generally, those wines are not exported. They're not in huge productions. You'll see them in Europe mainly, but not a lot in the UK. I think because they've got quite Afrikaans names, they tend to not roll off the tongue. But amazing wines. Really good wines, underrated part of the world. One of my favorite places to visit as a winemaker.
Okay, let's zoom in on Stellenbosch. The climate at Stellenbosch it's still got a little bit of coastal and the Doctor influence, hasn't it? And the Cape Doctor is a breeze that blows in. Is it like the Fremantle Doctor where it blows in every evening?
So the Cape Doctor is more of a wind that blows a lot of the smog and smoke away from Cape Town. So it's not
towards
just in
Stellenbosch.
No, it just blows it away and gets rid of it. So that's more, the air sort of hangs around Cape Town. It can get a little bit smoggy, a little bit
smoky. Is that what they call
smoky.
It, the Cape Doctor?
That's why they call it the Cape Doctor. It blows it all away.
Clears all the air.
Yeah. So we have essentially the Atlantic Ocean that we have a direct line of sight with for most of our vineyards. There are no mountains in the way obstructing the Stellenbosch region and the ocean, which is great.
Is that into False Bay or straight?
That's into False Bay. So what happens is during the day, we get a lovely cool breeze blowing through our vineyards. And then at nighttime, we get air draining out of the vineyard. So those lovely cool nights mean that we get slightly higher acids in our wine, slightly slower ripening. And then the cool weather during the day again helps keep the vines in check and ripen a little slower. Vines are similar to people. If they sort of get warmer, if the temperature's warm, ambient temperature's warmer than, say, 37 or 38 degrees, they actually shut down, so they can't photosynthesize. So it's important to have that sort of more cooling influence on them for a little bit longer hang time.
In the old days, that high temperature and the leaf roll virus meant there was a lot of green unripe fruit coming out of South Africa a long time ago.
Sure.
Not now.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. You know, I haven't had a really bad...
Yeah. Look, leaf roll virus is one of our biggest problems. For the listeners that's really that don't know about it, it's an interesting a virus which can be spread through infected plant material, also by an insect.
Yep.
Unfortunately, what it does is it causes the leaves to turn this beautiful burgundy red, that happens earlier and earlier every vintage, and it means that the vines can't photosynthesize, and so they can't ripen the fruit.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the only cure for this is to pull the vines out, which is expensive. It takes you another 4 years to get that vineyard back into production. You know, if you plant with infected plant material, you're right back at square one. So a huge amount of time and effort's gone into understanding how to combat virus, how it works, how it's spread by certain insects, how to combat those, and then also spending time on a lot of laboratory techniques to make sure that the plant material we are buying is free of virus.
Yep.
It's a constant battle. If I look at our property, in the early 90s, we probably had about 90% virus infection.
Yep.
We replanted in the late 90s, and to be 100% clean, today we probably have about 2 or 3% in our vineyard. So
it gets reinfected.
It creeps in. So one of the biggest problems is that there's an insect called a mealybug.
Yep.
And the mealybug will secrete a honeydew. And as a result, ants love to drink the honeydew, and they will move the mealybug from plant to plant closer to their nests. And by moving it, the mealybug latches onto the vine and creates an infection. So it's a big problem. They can be spread by wind as well.
Yep.
But generally, it's about good management of your vineyards, pulling out those infected vines, destroying them. Proper quarantines. If you do pull out an infected vineyard, giving it enough number of years to be fallow, the land to be fallow, pulling all the roots out. It's a big mission.
You've got to do the whole vineyard, not just the odd vine.
You can pull out. You can stave it off by pulling out vineyards. Your vineyard looks like someone shot a shotgun into it because you've got patches missing.
Yeah.
That will prolong it, but prolong the life of the vineyard. I mean, there's a lot of research now with certain varieties where people are saying you can live with virus, so things like Chardonnay, you can keep going for a number of years, even though it does have virus. Early ripening varieties, Pinot Noir, Pinotage, but late ripening varieties, it's devastating. So things like Cabernet and Grenache, it's a disaster, particularly varieties with a lot of pyrazine, so your Bordeaux varieties are result in those green wines that you talk about.
A lot
of stressed characters. So it's a problem. And it's not a sexy thing to talk about. Everyone likes to talk about all the rosy things,
but I feel
it's something that we've got to tackle, and serious winemakers, serious producers are already spending a lot of time and effort fixing that.
Just on that, so you've replanted your vineyard, now you're back to 1 or 2%. Do you pull out the vines to try and minimize the spread within the vineyard?
We do. So we probably have about 3 blocks which are infected. And every year we'll go through, we actually do a lot of aerial photography with drones, a lot of infrared camera use that can detect even the early onset of the virus.
Okay.
And then we will go and mark those vines, pull them out. It's kind of like going for chemotherapy. You know, you may or may not get it right,
but
it's better than not doing anything.
Yeah.
So
and it'll slow down the...
It will. So it's unfortunate because, old vineyards often make the greatest wines, and we tend in the region not to have a lot of old vineyards because of leaf roll virus. Rustenburg, our oldest vines were planted in the mid-80s. But we've been making wine since the late 1600s. So it is unfortunate that we have to do this. But we don't have frost. Europe has experienced an incredible frost. We have fires. We have a couple of other bits and pieces.
Do you get the same smoke damage problems the Aussies get?
We do. We have smoke damage issues. But we don't have, Chile's got earthquakes. Europe's got frost, which we don't tend to have too much of. There are some regions in South Africa that will have frost damage, but we generally...
Pretty
get off pretty lightly.
I don't want to reiterate this. So I would have thought that if vineyards are generally replanting, then the material that causes the infection is decreasing. So is it something you think you'll all ever be able to get rid of completely, or do you think you'll just get it down to a very manageable, sustainable level?
Unfortunately, I think vineyards that are not very well capitalized or grape growers that don't have good contracts can't afford to replant. There's no legislation banning someone from owning a virus vineyard, and so your weakest link is your poorest grower.
Yeah,
and so that's the big challenge. We've got growers that are like any part of the world where wine is produced. You've got some wine producers which do very well, grow a huge amount of grapes and make money, or others that that produce small amounts and high quality grapes and make money. And then you have some people that are caught in the middle, or they're not very well capitalized. They're not pulling those grapes out. Unfortunately, what's happening with a lot of the red varietals is that because the grapes don't ripen properly, they end up going into rosé production. So there's still a little bit of economical sort of value that can be eked out of those vineyards.
Yeah,
So I'm very vocal about virus. It's something I believe strongly in, and we focus on removing. But we're only as strong as our neighbors are about it. We're lucky most of our neighbors are fairly rigorous about their virus program.
Okay, I think we're going to leave it there, Murray. I think we'll come back next week and we'll get more into Stellenbosch and your vineyards and your wines.
Great, I look forward to that.
Cheers.
Thank you.